When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish Cup edition on our main show on a Tuesday of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host, Tony Anderson, and on this occasion, I am joined by my good friend, Craig Anderson.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm grand, and a man who is so safe, he wears walking boots the second the rain starts. It's Mr. Ewan Taylor. Hi, Ewan.
Hi, Tony. It's Garp Core. Look up. By the way,
I'm sure they are way out my price range, Ewan. But they did look very nice. But I mean, you did pack a lot of heat for your footwear on Friday night.
I did. Well, your practicality first. It was snowing. It was snowing in Lithgow on Friday, so I set off. You know, prepared for all the elements, and then get to Glasgow. There's slightly less snow on the ground, and everyone's wearing like Converse and stuff. So
Yeah, at least you're not childish and still wearing Converse, Ewan. I mean, there was a lot that could have been said there, but we did have a lovely time on Friday, and anyone listening who joined us, I'm sure you've got your email that we raised a fair whack of cash for Children First. So thanks so much for coming along. Craig, I'm sure you had a lovely evening as well.
The podcast part of it was great on Friday. The football watching in the crowds less so. But we'll get on to that. But yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the part I was involved in, I enjoyed being involved in, but I enjoyed watching, and I especially enjoyed the two interviews with the former Scotland stars that you know, Colin Hendry and Suzanne Winters. I have to admit, now I can say it now, I was slightly unsure when we had Colin Hendry announced as like what he was going to be like, because there's some stories about him floating about and all the rest of it. But the man was in top form, and he was very friendly and gave us a lot of his time, and his interview was really engaging. And Suzanne Winters, I didn't know her before, but also very good, and she gave as good as she got with Telfer, which was particularly amusing to me. So yes. Yeah, it was a great night.
Suzanne Winters, obviously I'd seen her on the telly. I didn't know about meeting her upstairs. She was just outrageously sound. And they were both really, really nice and made me feel at ease. And Colin Hendry especially, I mean, he made his way from Manchester to do that. And I mean, he left really early because, like you, and he thought there was going to be poor weather. And he left really early. He got there like the back of four, and no diva-ish whatsoever. He just sat and waited for the show to start and done it. And then obviously he'd done the Scottish Cup draw last night. So
he did.
Yeah, so a wonderful evening, and hopefully in the future we'll get to do them again, even if Fowler does say they're a bit
stressful.
What's the word he likes to use? They're stressful. Just because basically just worrying about ticket sales is really the main stress. But good money was raised, and we had a lovely time, and thanks again for coming along to see us. But we will start with last night, the reason that we're on a Tuesday. We start with the last quarterfinal between Ayr United, Falkirk and Ayr United. And Ewan, that turned out to be a right good laugh, I would say.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, especially the last 10 minutes or so were great. But I don't know how the bookies had it, but I sort of had Falkirk as slight favourites in my head. Obviously,
they did have them as favourites.
Yeah, just obviously, even though they're the league below, it just felt that being at home and Falkirk, obviously, probably on the park at least, probably are a championship club, really, in terms of their budget and their team. And Ayr's form has obviously been a wee bit up and down of late. It just felt that Falkirk were probably more likely to win it, but very obviously very even match and a good cup tie. Which eventually Falkirk sort of saw through. I mean, it was the Frankie Masonda show as it went on, but quite unfortunate. But and the two goals that weren't, two of the goals were deflections. But it was a good game.
Craig, did you get the feeling that in the first 20 minutes that Ayr United were actually going to blow Falkirk away?
Yes, exactly that. I was. Was watching the game with quite intently. I certainly have a lot riding on, especially seeing the draw.
That's what a Twitter persona does to you. Suddenly you have a lot riding on everything.
And when they scored and they were absolutely battering Falkirk, and I thought like this is maybe indicative of, like, I think you can always get that carried away with like a team doing well in the league below, and you're like, oh yeah, they would go in and immediately go, you know, into the top four or whatever in the championship or be at that kind of level. And then you're like, oh no, maybe the gulf is bigger than you think. And then I was like, all right, here, I'm maybe going to run away with this. And then it just, the tide turned. It was about that 20-minute mark. And to be honest, I think Ayr fans, and quite rightly so, will be hugely disappointed because they basically stopped playing. It was almost like, especially in the second half, it was true. I don't know how much of it was Falkirk imposing themselves on the game. Falkirk are a good team. I've watched them a few times this season and I've always been impressed. But
they're probably, I think a lot, I always seem to hear that Falkirk, and Telford says this a lot, and obviously he's someone who wouldn't praise Falkirk lightly, but I do hear a lot of them mention that like Falkirk are possibly like one of the best teams to watch in the entire country.
Yeah, that, I mean, and you saw that in the second half, especially. Yeah. I mean,
I would say so. I mean, I think they're one of the teams where you could probably not know who their manager was, and if you had to have a guess, you'd probably say they look like a John McGlynn team. Like, mm-hmm. They just do. They play very similarly to, you know, the Raith Rovers, the way the Raith Rovers did last season, for example. So tonight he's just got a lot of John McGlynn type players in that team. And even, you know, coming off the bench, guys like, you know, Kai Kennedy, for example, I can just see his career being bobbing around the lower leagues in Scotland wherever John McGlynn ends up, basically. I think they've just got a lot of players that sort of suit their style. And obviously, to begin with, they couldn't really cope with Akinyemi to begin with. But it was understandable. He is the best striker probably in the lower leagues at the moment, and he's sort of got, when he's on it, you know, I feel like I spend, you know, every second Friday night sort of watching Akinyemi just sort of tear a championship defence apart when they're
just so good
on the telly.
It's just so good. It's like he's so good. He's back to go, and he can turn on like a sixpence. You don't think he's going to be like that because of his size.
Yeah,
and the fact that he had quite a nomadic career before that. You're like thinking, why is this? I know the Scottish lower leagues might not be the highest level, but he's not been bouncing around the highest levels all the time either.
And I mean, I was thinking,
like, he's watching. It's like, man, he's got all the attributes you would want
wonder why he's not made. I mean, you're obviously not followed his career closely. I mean, I listened to the podcast Craig did last week about Ayr, and the chat was that he had been full time down south before, but then he'd end up having to go part time, and then you sort of transition back to full time with Ayr. So, I mean, I don't know if it's like a fitness thing, because he looks like a fit boy now. So I don't know what was, you know, maybe there were issues around that previously. But yeah, he's just got that mix of, you know, he's got talent, he's got skill, he can take the ball in, but he's also really strong with it. So took his goal pretty well, albeit, is it, it sort of looked, the goalkeeping looked quite pathetic. But whether you know, that's possibly slightly harsh, given that it did take a slight deflection, which is sort of, I think the keeper Kinnear realised that he wasn't going to get it, even if he'd sort of properly dive for it, so he just sort of let it go past him right into the corner.
And he was there. It's sort of like he hit another shot for about 35 yards, sort of really quickly after that. And you could see that obviously this is a guy that's in the mood for this and wants to not. And then he put a ball across the area that he sort of just missed it. I really fancied him to get to, and I'm still unsure of why it never
there. Yeah.
Why it never happened, because it looked like sort of bread and butter stuff. But
it was very.
When Falk got back in it, I was really impressed. I think what they've done is they dropped. See, Morrison was playing quite high. I think at that time, as you would expect, obviously being sort of kind of the star winger, but he dropped and sort of came in a bit more central to try and stem the tide. And I'm going to get the Kukurayevi.
Kucherevi.
I'll go for that. Thank you. Kucherevi, he also started to really, really impose himself on the game. And he's sort of got, he's quite a rounded player by the looks of things, because he's got a lot of grit, and he snaps into tackles, but he does have a good touch. And he was, as I said earlier on in the game, he was playing much more on the front foot. But as I said, I think there was maybe an element of getting carried away at the start and trying to play high up the pitch with not a lack of respect, but maybe the idea that you're playing sort of a team of the stat, like you're at home and you're just getting carried away with a huge crowd. And then, but they seem to come and play a bit more tactically and a bit more savvy and to sit in. And then they just started to be able to get control of the game. And as Craig was saying earlier, just the air just didn't really look like they fancied it at all the minute that it became sort of like in the middle of the park, and it became a bit more of a fair fight in there. And then they just never seemed to go for it at all.
I think it kind of started with that onslaught of set pieces from Falkirk, because the first half when they did come into the game, it was a lot of kind of crosses in, and then Cole Donaldson missed two really big chances. And you're right, it seemed like Ayr kind of didn't enjoy that. They didn't enjoy being attacked in that way, and then they did kind of go into their shell a bit. But then in the second half, Falkirk came out and it was a lot more football. It was a lot more like they were passing the ball about. And Stephen McGinn, for me, was at the centre of everything. A player who, I've said it before, the only reason he was the one of the several midfielders who left Killy last season, because he was the one that was out of contract. I'm pretty sure we would have rather had him than Brad Lyons, Blair Alston, etc. And a really composed figure. And when you're in that situation and you need a calm head and you need not to panic, he's a perfect player. And so it was, he was good. And then I thought the introduction, I thought nothing really happened for Matthew Wright up front. I'm just not sure if he's maybe not that good. I always think you're getting a guy who is kind of on the fringes at Ross County. Like, it's not like you're getting a guy on the fringes of like Hearts, Hibs, etc. He scored that goal against Rangers, but it didn't really look, I was surprised to see him being the one that started the game in the first place. And it didn't work for them. But then when they kind of changed it up a little bit and made some changes, I thought that was when they really took even more impetus in the game. Obviously, they got very lucky with the penalty. And not in the terms of the decision, in terms of it being incredibly stupidly defended. Yeah. And then obviously with Ayr United, Chris Maguire was not good.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Yes. Do we think, I mean, I can't say I've seen a lot of Maguire since he's come back. Are we talking about a guy who's just past it? How's he been in general?
Well, Alistair said he thought there was like wee glimpses of quality when I spoke to him in the podcast. I think came out on Friday. And I'd said on that one, he'd been linked with Kelly, and the chat I'd heard was that basically there was a lot of concerns about his fitness, and that kind of did appear to be what was the case yesterday, because he just wasn't involved in the game. And what happened is Akinyemi got very, very isolated because the midfield wasn't getting anywhere near him, and then he was the one that they were wanting as that link, and it just seemed like he didn't have the legs to do it. And then obviously I kind of felt like he wasn't going to score that penalty, to be honest. There was a real kind of weird vibe about it, kind of going up, and yeah, it was again not to hit the target is the one thing you have to do.
It was almost the best way you can miss a penalty, other than like the goalkeeper making a really like good save. But I suppose because the goalkeeper goes the right way, so he maybe puts a wee bit extra on it as he's hitting it, and just slightly further to the side. Obviously, that's at the inside of the post. So it was almost the perfect penalty, but obviously, it wasn't.
But yeah, I'm so impressed with the way that Falkirk sort of just took to grips. I know I was mentioning it earlier when I was talking about them narrowing up, and they did again. I mean, they had they saw even Nisbet was coming in, so they totally strangled and took over the whole midfield area, and Ayr looked like they didn't have any answers whatsoever, and Falkirk ended up suffocating them. And like you said, the whole second half, it was pretty much all Falkirk. Like you said, they were playing neat football through the midfield. They always had options. No one was ever isolated. There was loads of nice partnerships. They were able to push their defence really high up. And there's no denying that, even though we are talking that Falkirk are a championship team and everything but name, but Ayr are still one of the best teams in the championship. And for them to do that to them, especially after going 1-0 down, it takes a lot of balls to go ahead and do it, and a lot of like vindication in the work you're doing. So John McGlynn will take a huge amount of credit for that. And Ayr, as you said, but the penalty, they nearly kind of got away with it, and it would have been like totally undeserved for, as you say, maybe the hour after that first 20 minutes, and then they get that penalty. And I still couldn't really work out what the penalty was for. I could see it looked like there was something happening, but then when you really drilled down, I couldn't actually see what the issue was.
I thought the angle from behind the goal kind of showed like Donaldson clipping the player. It was interesting, like he didn't appeal at all. He kind of was looking at the ref straight away, and then obviously was it Stephen McGinn post match said
someone said that he'd said it was a penalty.
He said it was a penalty. I took him at his word in that point.
Righty-o, and then we finished off with, as you said, Kai Kennedy with a long range effort. I mean, Ewan saying that, I just wanted to get your feelings on this, Craig. Ewan saying that he thinks he'll be bouncing about the lower leagues. There was always more expected of Kai Kennedy, and obviously that's a huge moment. We're probably one of the bigger moments in his career, really. I mean, taking his team to the semi-final with a deflected effort, but he did take a lot of responsibility. He picked up the ball, he carried it.
It was really well done as well.
Yeah. So it wasn't just like a deflected effort. There was a lot that he took a lot of responsibility in that point. And do we see, I mean, he is still a sub in League One or in this game. I mean, what would be your feelings on where Kai Kennedy is going to end up in this world we live in?
I found that the whole thing about him was being quite odd, because at the same time he was being linked with, I think it was like Bayern Munich and stuff like that. He was going out on loan from Rangers to the Championship. This was like years ago. And you're like, my feeling is if Rangers have a player who they genuinely believe is going to make it at Rangers and they send him out on loan, it will be to a Premiership club. It will not be the Championship, and he's been around several Championship clubs, and now he's down in League One. That to me was the kind of first indication. Now, occasionally that's not been the case, but mostly that's like your second tier of Rangers youth players, the ones that they're like, or maybe we'll get to sell them down to England for a couple of hundred grand rather than this guy is going to be in our first team. Like, I don't think Leon King would be going out on loan to like Hamilton Accies or anything like that, for example. But every time I see him, I'm like, you can see why he would be highly rated, because there is undoubted talent. He's a player who brings a bit of spark, and he's that classic like winger playing off the left and cutting in, which is what he did, but he does it with, like, he's got really good body shape. I've enjoyed watching the bits I've seen of him at Falkirk this season, and I think Ewan's probably right. I doubt he will have a future, well, he definitely will have a future at Rangers, and I doubt he'll have a future as like a top end Premiership player. Wouldn't it surprise me if at some point a Premiership club down the bottom took a chance at some point in his career, because when you've got talent, teams will go, well, we need someone like that. But yeah.
We can make it work. Yeah. Watch us.
Yeah.
But you, sorry.
No, I was just saying, I think he's, I mean, he's obviously extremely small. And I think, yeah, and you don't want to be like, oh, well, you know.
Here comes Gordon's tracking,
eh? Exactly. You know, like, sort of projecting because you're a small man and you think that bigger men are better. But I think you've got to be, you do have to be really, really good if you're going to be that small. And he is really, really small. I think he's like 5'4" or 5' or something. I mean, he's proper small. So I just don't think he is quite good enough. It was always him. I mean, he was in the same youth team as Nathan Patterson, and it was always those two in that team were considered the two sort of diamonds. One had all the physical attributes you could want in Patterson, and the other one, apart from staying fit, right enough, which Patterson struggled with. Whereas Kennedy didn't have any, but did seem to be very talented. But I just don't think he's quite talented enough, and maybe doesn't have quite the, I don't know if attitude has been questioned previously. I mean, without really knowing if that's true or not, then you don't really want to say that. But I can't see him having a really good career, to be honest. And I think it probably will be maybe lower reaches of Premiership, but probably the lower leagues, to be honest.
And Kinnear looked like he did a decent game in goals. And I mean, that was that only, please correct me if I'm wrong, the sixth game for Falkirk. That looks like a half decent pickup.
Yeah.
I don't know much about him. So
did he not used to play with Rangers a bit?
Yeah. So he's at West Ham now, but yeah, so he was one of the covidiots that got caught with Bassey and then Patterson playing Monopoly and having pizza, whatever it was.
Playing Monopoly, quote unquote. Yeah.
he got, I mean, he didn't get released totally because of that, but he got, his contract was up and he left that summer, and West Ham picked him up. But he's obviously not been anywhere near the West Ham team. But he looks like a goalkeeper. I think, as I was saying, I think that first goal looked quite bad, but probably wasn't really his fault. He did make a pretty bad mistake last week against Inverman. So mixed bag, but we'll see how he gets on, because they previously had Hogarth from Nottingham Forest. He also was at Rangers as a youth. So they had him, and then he left in January to go back to Notts Forest, and they got in Kinnear. So
sure, he made a pretty bad mistake against Darvel, if I remember, with the cross he just let in. So yeah. Maybe they're all shite.
I thought he was quite good, Hogarth. Yeah. But
Right. So it could have been Craig Anderson's Kilmarnock going up against League One Falkirk in the Scottish Cup semi-finals, where they no doubt would have embarrassed themselves. So maybe it was just better to get out of the way there, Craig. What do you think?
I think it's a big blow. Kelly haven't been in the Scottish Cup semis since 1997, since we won it then. So it's a very long time for a club
that's insane.
Been in the Premiership for most of that time. Finished third in the Premiership once and definitely top six or seven times period. And the last five, this is sixth quarterfinal defeat since then, but the last five have all come against Premiership teams. And so this is the first time it's been against, you know, lower league opposition. And yeah, okay, it was up at Inverness and we've got a terrible record up there, and we're not obviously a very good team, but it's a massive missed opportunity for Kelly. Especially when you go ahead, as I say, we were doing the live show on Friday night, and we were on, and I deliberately asked, I said, can I go on at the start, and then I can watch you guys, keep an eye on the game, rather than being distracted, you know, when it's like the last 15 minutes, and I'm trying to interview Colin Hendry whilst not really having my head in.
Shut up, Colin Hendry, Vassell's just scored a header.
But so I watched that back, and I came off the stage, and it was about 4 minutes gone and we were already 1-0 up, and I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just come back on, no worries.
And from that moment, so I saw 86 minutes of the game, more or less, we didn't do anything in the whole game. So
really bad.
Inverness thoroughly deserved the victory. There is absolutely no doubt about that. They were the far better team on the night. They probably got a wee bit lucky with the penalty decision. I couldn't decide if it was a penalty or not, because I think if it comes off Wright's leg before his arm, it probably shouldn't be. But at the same time, I talked about Caldonnelly not complaining. Wright basically made no complaint at all after it. It was so needless as well. Okay, it was pretty poor from Chambers letting them in down the left in the first place. But then Taylor is clearing that ball. There's no actual danger behind Wright. He doesn't need to kind of do the whole kind of last gasp diving in act anyway. And maybe it was just kind of delaying the inevitable, but it felt like Kelly had soaked up a wee bit of pressure. You're going to go under pressure once you've scored the opening goal. We soaked up a bit. They'd had the header that Walker had tipped over the bar. Stuff like that. You're like, right, this is a big part of the game. We've got ourselves through to near the half hour mark, and then it's really cheap. And then we didn't react well to that either. But it's frustrating, because I've had the vibe with this team this season that whilst they've not been very good, like on their day, they've had plenty of performances where they beat Hibs, they beat Aberdeen, they gave Celtic a very good game at Hampden in the League Cup semi. So there was always still that nagging thing in the back of my mind. You know what, if we can just get to this semi-final, and as it turned out, that would have been the draw, because the number in the hat wouldn't have changed next to each other alphabetically. And you could have had a Scottish Cup final, and then it is very much like, I don't think the team is incapable of winning a game like that, but you have to get there. And so that was the frustration for me. And I
don't mean to be... I don't want to bring it back to this, because this doesn't really normally matter, especially for a club like Kilmarnock, who should be making this. But like, Killy have a lot of players going out of contract. Money matters. But money matters if you're going to go on a rebuilding job, regardless of what league you're in. And I know the players don't think this way, and I know fans don't really, but I am just thinking that it's a huge opportunity. Like, even if just to get to the final with the pooled Monday semi-finals, that could be a couple of decent players, man.
Well, that's what I thought the League Cup semi-final would have done for us. I thought, right, we've got that League Cup semi-final. We're going to use that money to invest in the squad. And no, we got Vassell and Chambers, who was only really signed because our other on-loan young English left-back was injured. So... yeah, you're right. As I say, I don't think much of the squad that's out of contract will be missed anyway. So the clear out's fine, but I want it to be a clear out when we're in the Premiership. If it's a clear out when we're in the Premiership, I'm fairly confident they'll get it right, to be honest. But if it's a clear out in the Championship and you're just kind of going around in the same circle of having to offer 2-year deals and all the rest of it, I feel that's going to get you into a bit of a cycle.
That's me turning a yo-yo club. Yeah, for that exact reason. I get you.
But that was the real frustration. There was the big opportunity in front of you. Inverness have not been that great this season, and they've certainly they obviously got the win against Ayr last week, which gave them a wee boost, and they beat Livy in the previous round quite comfortably. But that seemed like a bit of a freak result.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to do a lot to win that game. They were better than Killy. Billy Mackay was a constant menace, as he so regularly is. And they defended very well. And then Sean Welsh is a player who's been really unfortunate in his career, in the sense that I think had he not totally had injuries over and over again, I think he would have been a bottom six Premiership player, certainly, but a Premiership
nonetheless,
player.
Nonetheless, a Premiership player.
And he's just never been able to string it together. So they have good players. It's weirdly, despite having not been in the Premiership for, 8 years now, Inverness? I can't remember exactly when they got relegated. Maybe not as long as that. It was 2017 they went down, so
6 years.
Six years.
Yeah.
There's still like several players in that squad who you kind of picture playing for Inverness in the Premiership, even though most of them never did. There's just some weird vibe about them, but they're not a terrible team, but they're not even a team that's probably going to make the playoffs. I think Falkirk, you said Falkirk favourites against you. I think Falkirk will be favourites to beat them and get to the final, to be honest.
When you look at the two midfields, for example, I would still say, like, for the little that I know, that I would fancy Falkirk's midfield over them. But the problem for Kilmarnock, like you, and I don't know what your feelings are, but like when you see White, Welsh and Allardyce, I'm thinking against Donnelly, in Polworth. You're thinking, like, all you need to do is win the fight there. I mean, the quality is obviously, like, Polworth, like, a high-quality football player. I mean, I don't want to get that. And Donnelly, maybe not so much. I mean, I think we're all in agreement that Donnelly sort of lives his life off.
I talked about Stephen McGinn and the fact that he was obviously out of contract and stuff anyway. Mm. But to be honest, I would rather we just kept him and didn't sign Donnelly, in all honesty. Not that I think McGinn's a Premiership player, but he's Donnelly.
He's not, yet.
Yeah.
But you do look at that midfield at Inverness, you think that you can see how they can overrun that? Or is that unfair?
No. The Kelly midfield's been... We are better when Rory McKenzie's in the middle of the park, like almost forming part of a three, because McKenzie, for all he started his career as a forward and all that, as an attacking threat, he offers very little, but as a runner and as someone who just has energy and dig and all the rest of it, he's great. And we've turned to playing 4-4-2 or like some variant of it quite a lot recently, and it doesn't get the best out of him, but it also really makes the midfield so toothless.
Mm-hmm. Then Hendon, I mean, the biggest worry, again, for the highlights, is that it looked like Inverness were getting better as they went ahead. Like they only looked like, again, that's only for highlights, that it looked like they were just more likely to go ahead and score more.
Kelly threatened exactly zero times in the whole, and for a team that's like, I'm still not questioning, to be honest, the desire of the team, you know, folk go on about, oh, they weren't trying and stuff. I think they're just really, really shit. Like, they can't string the passes together, the amount of times that, you know, first touches going out the park and stuff. And I know that you and will be feeling smug about that, because we had the discussion back in August, and he said, you know, Kelly, and I was being positive on this, in the sense that, well, first of all, the first league game of the season, we played Dundee United at home. I didn't know they were going to be terrible, and we were the better team. And I thought, we're on the front foot there. And I thought, do you know what? There's some, and I do think there's still a handful of Premiership quality players in the squad. And I'm thinking, right, we're going to augment that towards the end of the window and bring players in. It's just never happened. And then if you took 5 or 6 of the current players and put some better ones alongside them, I don't think we would be having any discussions about them not being up to it. But when they're all struggling and the style of football is not conducive to getting anything out of them.
That's what I was going to say, because, I mean, obviously personnel is an issue, and to what extent Derek McInnes is to blame for that, you can argue, because the contractual situation when it was what it was, and you know, it wasn't that easy maybe to turn around in the time that he's been in charge. But tactically, it's brutal. I mean, it really is brutal to watch. It's very. It reminds me a wee bit. This is better than it should. It reminds me, McKenzie seems to have often done this. Remind me of Walter Smith's teams, but with significantly, obviously, you know, players that aren't even, you know, in the same ballpark as Smith had. But you're basically playing that a back four, but with three centre halves.
I think like that's away from home. Like they've been up quite a different team at home in terms of like when they went on the front foot.
But why not? So you know, Alabioso, I know his form's maybe been up and down a wee bit, but he is available, and you know, he was on the bench. Why is he not playing as a right back instead of Mayo? Looks like was playing right back. You've got Doigen and Vassell up front. I mean, come on, that doesn't work. And the tactic is just, you know, it seems to me, and fair enough, you scored another goal like that. You just got the ball. Damn it. Armstrong got the ball, crossed the ball because he's good at that, and it hit off one of the big lads. I wasn't even sure if it was on purpose, but it was a goal. And Doidge almost scored a goal exactly the same, where it just hit off him in the box because he's a big lad. But if that's what you're down to, I mean, Scott Robinson's not bad. Like, Scott Robinson's, and again, maybe he has fitness issues, but, you know,
he's certainly mobile. He's certainly mobile. Clever. He's a tactically astute player.
Yeah.
Jordan Jones. I thought last week when, Jones has had a lot of chances and he's kind of been dropping off. But Robinson, I thought, say when he didn't play at Ibrox, I thought it's probably just that he's being given a break to go and play this one. Do you know what I mean? I thought he's just being kept in reserve for the Friday night. And I was really surprised to see him not starting.
But yeah, Jones was like one of the was probably Kelly's best player at Ibrox. I would have said it's a very different type of game, but he was good. And then he's on the bench and he comes on at half time again, as he did at Ibrox. But I just think McInnes has to start taking a bit of the. He doesn't seem to have really received any.
He does seem to be sliding, no bother, eh? Nobody ever questions.
I think the support is probably kind of at the end of the tailor to some extent. I've been quite accepting of the fact that the squad wasn't good, and there's some blame on him for that. But I think every one of the decisions that was made, more or less, I could see there was a logic to it, but they just all didn't add up at the end. But stuff like that, and I think the best spell Kelly had was we won three games in a row. I think we beat St Johnstone at home, we beat Dundee United in the League Cup quarter final, and one other game I can't remember. And it was with kind of a hybrid between a back three and a back four, and we had Alabiosu as right wing back and Armstrong basically in front of him, and then we had Jones as a sort of left wing back, and it was like, you know, that kind of Armstrong was just floating about, and that was to me the best we played.
Getting your best players in the park, yeah, and well, but your Alioso and Armstrong as well, like you're bringing a partnership with two guys who you feel can work together and be a threat. And overload in one of the areas of the pitch. You can only, if you've only got certain good players, you want to create an overload with them to sort of link up.
And I can remember someone went out the team, and rather than just trying to go like for like, I don't know if it was Jones got injured, and rather than just, for example, bringing in a Fraser Murray, who's maybe not as talented as Jones, but has played that role as well, he started messing about, and he's never really gone back to it. And I don't know, because I think Wright and Mayo, to be honest, have been all right, and the two of them with Taylor as a back three is fine to me. Like, that's not bad. But everything round about it's just kind of fell in. And we're playing St Johnstone at home on Saturday. I think that's a must win. I think we probably will win, but it's just getting to that stage where you're just like, now this was the excitement of the season. You're like, well, you know, we've got all this shit going on, but we're in the cup, and if we got a semi, it's just something to cling on to. Now you're just like, let's win three of these 10 games that are left, and hopefully that's enough. And that's what I think we will do. I think we'll win three of them, and whether that is enough or not, we'll find out. And for Inverness, like, fair play to be knocked out of the cup and then get to the semi-final is quite an impressive feat. Like Dodds has bought himself a lot of time with that. I mean, I think the podcast was, the suggestion was, he's probably not going to stay anyway, and that's fine. But
if he wins the Scottish Cup and they're guaranteed group football in Europe, I think he will.
Well, maybe get someone better anyway, but use that money.
You've got us here, Billy, but actually, no thanks. Get back to the BBC.
What Motherwell should have done with Graham Alexander. but yeah, like Dodds has been good in these big games. He had Kelly's number last season, mostly Tommy Wright's number, but he had Kelly's number last season. It seems to be the other games that they kind of lose a bit. And I did look at their form, and I think actually in the last like 10 games, despite it seeming bad, I think they've lost twice to Hamilton Accies, both like in the back-to-back, and the rest have been good results. So it shows a wee bit of perception as well. But yeah, it was, they'll be pleased, but I think they'll know they didn't really have to work as hard as they'd have thought they had to done. Probably just like when they beat Livy in the previous round. And I think they'll be second favourites against Falkirk, but they've got a chance to make yet another final, which for the history of the club, how long they've been around and the rest of it, they've been incredibly successful.
Yeah. Full stop. So congratulations to Inverness there. We've got you in here. Let's go and talk about good old Raith Rovers versus Rangers, and basically from the highlights looked like one big set piece. Is that fair, Ewan?
It was an exceptionally boring game. I'm still in shock because you missed such a tapping of a link there to say that another team that hasn't been around for so very long and has been successful recently is Rangers. But anyway,
he's got a better sense of humour, man, than going into that again. But I mean,
anyway, carry on. It was just. It was one of those where you just never. I mean, apart from Isma almost scored from the halfway line.
If that was on target, it was a goal.
Yeah, it was. I think that it would be one of those where I think Ibrox might have applauded that as a goal, because it was so early on in the game that and it would have been obviously an amazing goal. I wouldn't have been worried, but I would have been like, ah, fair play, well done.
And that's Old Firm fans for you guys. well done, that was nice, right? There's five goals.
Pat in the head, yes. We might have played better if they had done that. But Wraith Rovers, fair play to them, defended incredibly deep. Had a good tactic where if anyone headed the ball away, they just went down injured, which is a good...
That's becoming a very classic tactic in sort of world football, I think, now. Mm-hmm. We are, and that seems to be something everyone's getting worried about, really.
Yes, so that was quite annoying. You felt the goal was coming, and eventually it was a nice emphatic header from Conor Goldson. I imagine Wraith would be annoyed that that's how they end up conceding, but
the time as well.
Because obviously the Ibrox is getting ready for a good old boo at halftime if it's still 0-0.
It's a brilliant header, it's so emphatic.
It was good. It was really good. I think Goldson could have scored a couple of times before that, so
he looked like the biggest threat.
It's not that Wraith probably feel a bit annoyed that that's how they conceded, but to be fair, they had a bit of a makeshift back four. I don't think Wraith are really that, a defensive team that are full of like cloggers. I mean, they're just not, they've got like Stanton and Easton and Connolly. These are quite talented players, mm-hmm. and not massive either. So it wasn't like they're really that well set up to defend really deep and just get your head loads of set pieces away.
Yeah, and they were missing Scott Brown as well, which they did against Partick last week. And that really leaves it. There's no, as you're saying, it then just leaves sort of nice footballers in there rather than someone who's like sort of capable of breaking it up. And I'm not saying that he would be able to create the transitions for Wraith Rovers, but he's like the only player who's got that energy and bite that could create those little moments where you can sort of change from defence to attack quickly, which if you're going to get any sort of joy against the Old Firm, you're going to need at least, two or three of those moments over 90 minutes where you can maybe sort of make a goal out of that. Staying with Wraith Rovers, Sean was talking about Mason. Mason, for the purposes of a Rangers game. he was doing his exams last year, and now he was sort of running up at Ibrox, and he didn't seem to really put much. He did fine. Obviously, he's going up against, I know Kent has got a bit more of a free role under Beale, but he obviously still floats out to that left, so he's going up against probably arguably one of the most skillful players in the league, and he stood up all right. So a wee special mention to him, but it was a defence against attack exercise, which obviously the tougher, the sort of better the team, the more like Tynecastle and Easter Road, you've seen Rangers sort of put on their best performances, but it seems like the lower league teams, we've had Dundee this season, we've had Partick Thistle, and maybe not to the same degree Wraith Rovers, because in the end they still were comfortably beaten, but they've all, so you'd argue, done better going to Ibrox than a lot of the other teams.
Yeah, well, you say, you're not, obviously not lower league, but like Ross County, that was only 2-1.
You just have to sit in, really. I think people have to, Hibs, Hearts, and we need to get over themselves and accept that there is really pretty much only one way to be playing against the Old Firm now.
Yeah, I don't know if, Celtic, I don't know if that really helps if you do that, but against Rangers, it's definitely the way to play. Because Rangers aren't as practiced in terms of the sort of attacking choreography. I think Rangers also have probably more bad habits than Celtic in terms of relying on cross balls a lot. So if you can, and because we just don't really have that many players that are good at attacking them, so it's we get Barisic and Tav Tavernier are good at crossing, but if there's no one in the box to hit, then might not lead to anything. So I think that is the way to play against Rangers, and obviously it's like you would think. I think Hearts and Hibs and Aberdeen probably could give us a game. Make it really really tight if they're willing to play like that. But if they're willing to walk into a buzzsaw, which is, they've all done that at different times this season. Aberdeen did at Ibrox earlier in the year. That was when Van Brockers was still the manager.
Yeah, it was 4-1.
And that was when Rangers really weren't playing well at all, but it was easy to play that way. And then Hibs did it, I think, last week, Easter Road, and Hearts did it a few weeks ago as well at Tynecastle, where if you just you try to have a go, but it's not really the way to go about it tactically. It's just a bit stupid.
It's like, and it was an unintelligent ways of having to go. It's like Hearts put a bizarre lineup with big strikers in midfield and stuff, and then Hibs sort of like just didn't bother with playing a right back.
Yes.
Told them to push up front and sorry, out wide and almost central for large periods. Because I remember I got really frustrated about Cadden for the goal because he doesn't make a bit of mistake. And I'm like, why is he up there? And then I realise quite quickly, he's been told to do this because he's doing it. And, you know, once you hit like a period of time where someone's doing the same thing constantly, you do have to accept then that's clearly
that's
what the
instruction.
The manager's told him to do. But exciting thing, moment for Rangers.
Just what you were about to say. Hadji's obviously had a few things, and I thought you maybe got a wee glimpse of, with that goal with him linking up with Cantwell, you got a wee glimpse of what that Rangers team could be. Because I think he's the type of player that they've missed for a long time. Mm. And it was the first time, he's kind of been involved here and there in games, like since he came back, but that's the first time I've seen him kind of be involved in a goal kind of so heavily.
Great ball action. He seemed to get on the ball quite a lot in that period.
That was definitely his most positive contribution since he's come back from injury. I mean, it's an area team that's difficult to get into, I would say, given, you know, Tillman is out at the moment, but is apparently back shortly, and then you've got Cantwell as well, you're not going to see Tom Lawrence this season, and maybe not Alex Lowry either because he's also got injury problems. But we have a lot of players in that area of the park, and it's just whether Hadji looks like he needs to run the games. I suspect it'll be next season before we see him back to sort of anything like, you know, he was probably pre-injury. But yeah, that was definitely promising, and probably I think maybe if Rangers lose the next Old Firm game at Parkhead, then in the week, then you might see a bit more experimentation in the league games after that, which would probably mean that Hadji might get a few starts, and then we'll see where he is after that.
Yeah, because you think, I mean, the issues that you're specifically talking about for Rangers playing against deep defences, that Hadji'd be one of the best.
Yeah, he would help.
And the team, and like you're saying, with Cantwell and Raskin, who I absolutely bossed this game by all accounts, then you start to just go similar, I mean, I know they don't want to be compared, but similar to Celtic, where it's like really, really overloading on football players and not really worrying about, and that might end, I think in the end, we'll find that Sakala will get moved back to an impact player. I think that will happen eventually. I mean, he has been really, really good, but I do feel that as the team evolves, it's going to evolve into a football team, and everyone in that is going to be really adept at taking the ball in tight areas, making nice sort of slide drill passes with a lot of good weight around their passes and making good central runs. I do think that will happen eventually. Fairly or not, I don't know, but that's just what I think will eventually happen. And I could see Hadji sort of becoming quite an important player in that team again.
Yeah, he's definitely suits. I think he's closer to what Michael Beale would imagine a sort of attacking player looks like for Rangers than Fashion Scala is. But Scala, he is effective. He is quite effective.
He sure is.
He's just, he can be quite annoying, but he is effective. So, yeah, I don't know. But we'll see. There's some chat that Beale might want to go to three at the back, which would be interesting. I don't know if he might just have been saying it to sort of be polite to John Suter. and the thing is, you're not just going to play like when Conor Olsen gets injured once every five seasons. He suggested
he signed up for that. That was his.
He did.
That's his bloody cross to bear.
Yes.
Run his coffee shop.
Indeed, he will have that.
And now we will finish with the Saturday early kickoff. Which you think would be the biggest game out of these four, but just with the relentlessness of Celtic and sort of Hearts just not being able to live with them and not find any sort of tactical nous to get around it, and obviously missing their star striker and sort of their main player. I mean, Boyce, another one, but he's out as well, that can sort of hold the ball up and play ways back to goal. The minute you saw it, was like you were thinking, well, the only thing that's going to happen here is that Hearts are just going to have to play quickly over the top to Ginelli, and it doesn't really work a lot because Carter Vickers just wins the ball all the time.
When Celtic had a really good chance and then another shot that was quite a decent shot within the first minute of the game, you're like, oh, okay. And then and obviously it was like really not that much further on until they scored as well. And at that point, with a Celtic team, you really don't see them like giving up a lead. There's been certain Celtic teams in the past where you think, you know, they might still crumble under that. And it's just especially with Hearts kind of missing a few, it was like that's the game then, and that's how it turned out. Like when they added a second one as well, it's hard because I actually had a wee inkling that Hearts might do something in the game. I didn't necessarily think they were going to win, but I thought it's maybe going to be a tough test for Celtic, one of the tougher ones we've had this season, and it really wasn't. And that's when you start looking at them and saying, like, you need to really catch them on a good day. And even when St Mirren, I think, did last weekend, I thought like St Mirren were really looking quite strong in that game last week, and then they lose a man and then ship five goals because you can't play against them with 10. And it's the same. Everything the planet really have to align for you, and they have to not align for Celtic to get something. And that's maybe even true for Rangers, which is maybe the worry at the moment. They obviously don't have to align to the same extent for Rangers, but they do have to really catch Celtic on an off day. And obviously with the big, I mean, yeah, you're probably writing off the league, but the big semi-final coming up now, Rangers can beat them, of course they can, but it's hard to see how.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the game at Ibrox at the turn of the year, I suppose that was, Rangers didn't actually play that well in that game, or at least had long spells in that game where they were rubbish and still probably should have won. So that was a bit more. And then the League Cup final, Rangers were absolutely terrible for 90 minutes and only lost by a goal, but to be fair, could have been and should have been more than that. So I don't know. It's still early, I suppose, in the sort of Buell and Postecoglou sort of going head-to-head games. It's maybe we can't read a pattern in the same way you could have with under Van Bronckhorst, was just like, we'll just probably get battered in every game. So yeah, we'll see. But I think it's very difficult unless Celtic are willing to make some howlers. And because they never really get, and this is not like a paranoid thing, they never get men sent off or anything like that. Like and
because they're never stretched.
Yeah, exactly. They don't really make tackles. Like so in that way. So it's like, you need something. Certainly, I think if Hearts were to have won, they needed something like that. You know, like Callum McGregor gets sent off early on in the game, and then you know something, you know, and then that's
keeper to drop the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Hart will make a howler maybe once every 20 games, maybe. So he does that as well at the same time, and then you know, and then maybe something happens. But
Hart made a great double save from Toby Civic during it, and I always think that's when Hart's at his best. Those ones where you get down low, and he's after I heard Fowler and Joel talking about on the top 12 goalkeepers, like he is just absolutely massive. He's really, really strong, and he's able to get rid of that, which is sort of like, it was a big moment because that was like the only time Hearts looked like they were probably going to, they had the opportunity to get back in the game, and it was still 1-0 then. But I enjoyed Kyogo's goal. It was
absolutely.
Lovely. And then Alistair Johnson's cross as well is just, it's got so much pace on it. It's like so much conviction on it, and he knows exactly what he wants to do. And Kyogo, because he's just so good at making that run across the front post, is that you would always, if you put your head up, you think hard and low is probably always going to be that he will get there. His movement's just sharper than what the other players are, and it's a lovely wee finish. Aaron Moy continuing his incredible form. Marcelo Haksabanovic coming in after quite a lot of good performances recently, and like we always say, this doesn't miss a beat. Nothing changes whatsoever with these players coming in. I think I don't really know what anyone can do. I mean, I was going to ask either of you really. Barry McKay is coming under pretty serious cosh now. I mean, there was murmurs for a while, people defending him, but we are getting to the stage now where quite a large portion of the Hearts fans are starting to take umbrage at his, not just his performances in the big games, which have always been something that has been kind of levelled at him, but now just his performances in general. I mean, do you ever see Nielsen actually dropping him?
Probably should. Certainly for the bigger games. I mean, I really like Bernie McKay, always have as a player. But yeah, in games like certainly in games like Saturdays, they just don't suit him. And they never have really, apart. I mean, yeah, he scored, famously scored one really good goal against Celtic in the semi final, but
he's
nothing
in the end though.
Yeah, exactly. But well, I suppose yes, in the final it was. That day was still that day is still dear in my heart. He doesn't really do that though now, because he doesn't tend to shoot from distance very often, even though he's quite good at it. So yeah, he's always been lightweight, and he's a bit like, you know, we're obviously talking about Kai Kennedy, and there's a chance that Kai Kennedy's career, I mean, I think that's probably the best outcome for Kai Kennedy, is he becomes like the new Barry McKay. But it might take him as long as it took Barry McKay to get to where Barry McKay is now. And, you know, and that's like, he goes down to England and has a few sort of failed spells, really, and then it comes back up here.
So much to look forward to, Kai.
Yeah. yes. That's an example of, if you don't have the physical attributes, it can be really hard. Even, you know, you can have all the talent, but if you don't have the physical attributes, then and maybe your attitude is slightly questionable, it's tough. And especially
you can imagine the kind of match up your attitude starting to go in when you don't have the confidence. We've seen you're just getting pushed around a bit in games, not getting the time. I don't mean this in a bad way, I can just see anyone really going through this, is that eventually the toys will come at the pram a bit, and you will get a bit huffy, and life isn't fair a bit, and these big cloggers are kicking me, you know, like that. Whether it's true or not, that's just how you'll start feeling. It'll be interesting, because I mean, we are talking about one of Hart's sort of best players, and certainly was one of their best players last season, so it'll be interesting to see how Nielsen sort of deals with this, especially if injuries maybe come back. But I think we'll leave it there. We got a lot more out of that than we thought. We got a deep dive into Kilmarnock, got a little bit more about Rangers, and we can all talk shit for Scotland. So thanks very much for listening. We appreciate it. We're going to go over to Patreon really quickly. We're going to have a discussion about that sort of like snapshot we were given on the lack of minutes from under 21 players. Just a little bit of an opinion on what we think that means, or what that actually does. It does that in context. You know what I mean? You come over, you can listen to us. But thanks again for listening. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.